Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi, and welcome. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with two women whose careers involve the topic of gray divorce, that is, individuals divorcing in midlife. What are the financial, emotional, and spiritual ramifications of this? Why is it happening with such rapidity, and what can we offer those men and women currently examining this possibility or actually doing it? Jocelyn Crowley is a professor of public policy, a member of the graduate faculty in the Department of Political Science, and affiliated faculty member of the Department of Women's and Gender Studies at Rutgers University. She is currently studying the impact of gray divorce, divorce at or after the age of 50, on the lives of men and women across the United States, and in the process of writing a book on this topic. Her book, Mothers Unite, Organizing for Workplace Flexibility and the Transformation of Family Life, was published in 2013. She has published numerous articles in such magazines as the American Journal of Political Science, Social Science Quarterly, and Women's Studies International Forum. Sandhya Verma Higgins is a licensed professional counselor of mental health in the state of Delaware. Ms. Verma Higgins has been in private practice since 2010. Prior to that, she worked with mental health community at Dover Behavioral Health System in Delaware, providing individual life skills and group therapy services for the inpatient and day treatment consumers being treated for severe mental health issues, addiction, and co-occurring disorders. Currently, she works with adult consumers seeking treatment for depression, anxiety, life change, self-esteem, stress, mood disorders, and personality disorders. So welcome, Jocelyn and Sandhya.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having us.
Before we get into the topic of gray divorce, why would someone call it gray divorce as opposed to silver divorce? Jocelyn?
That's a really interesting question. I would like to say that I came up with the name myself because it is quite clever. Actually, people have been referring to the process of divorcing at midlife using both terms, gray divorce and silver divorce. Gray divorce has been used a little bit more commonly. I didn't come up with it. Several researchers a couple of years ago did some statistical analyses on sort of the composition of people getting divorced in the United States, and they found that among individuals 50 and over, that their rate of divorce has really been escalating. So they started to talk about this concept of gray divorce, and then the media picked it up. So it wasn't really necessarily a conscious choice on my part, sort of piggybacking on what's been out there. But I have seen several articles talking about it and using the term silver as well.
I find this so fascinating because in previous generations, there were no gatekeepers around the subjects of divorcing at midlife, having a midlife crisis, going through perimenopause and menopause, new older motherhood. As both of you may know, I've done a ton of work around midlife mothering and these age and stages called midlife. But it just seems that there's something new about our current society that these times, this stage, this age, is creating so much flux, especially for women. Would you both agree?
Yes, I think that's true.
And do you have any ideas why, before we start talking about who gets divorced? Why?
In some of my research, I've looked at a variety of factors, and actually in my interviews, I can talk about that when we get to the point of sort of the causes. But there are a whole bunch of reasons. The baby boomers are aging, and they're looking at their lives going forward and trying to imagine what they want them to look like. They're not necessarily settled and happy with where they are, and they want to make some changes, and they do. So there has been this explosion, and it's a really, really important demographic trend to look at.
And Sandhya, what do you find is the preeminent cause for this or reason for this?
Well, I think that it's very individualized, but generally what I've seen in my practice and, you know, in case consultations with other people, other clinicians, are that there's, you know, get a little bit older than your 50s, you begin to, in our elder years, look back and do sort of like a life review, and typically people are usually left with either regret or peace with that, you know, overall. And so I think that, as Jocelyn was saying, baby boomers are looking at their lives and saying, I haven't gotten everything that I want. What do I want out of my life? And now may be the time, if my kids are grown and out of the house, that I can now feel free to move forward. So it may be that life review is happening a little earlier, that people who are going through this kind of thing are more restless. I feel like now we're living in a very disposable society, and maybe that's rubbing off as well, you know, in terms of younger generations and how they've been raised up on technology and instant gratification and things like that. And still, I think we're a very goal-oriented society and in a very individually goal-oriented society. So I think those are some factors that may play into what we see happening now.
So do either of you have any stats for number of people per year, number of divorces in this country?
Sure. So what these researchers found a couple of years ago is that, and what the news media picked up, was that right now, one out of every four divorces in America is gray, meaning that at least one of the participants has reached the age of 50 or older. And when you translate that in terms of actual numbers or statistics, that turns out to be about 650,000 individuals per year going through a gray divorce. So it's a pretty striking number.
That's amazing. And what age range does that encompass?
So 50 and older. So everyone 50 and older. You can get people divorcing in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and even 90s.
Okay. Anything about areas of the country, stage in their lives, other than the number you're bringing to the table, retirement, pre-retirement?
Right. So in terms of the statistical analysis, while those numbers are larger than we've ever seen them before, they're still quite small with respect to the overall population of the United States. So we're not able to, at this point, or researchers haven't been able to drill down in terms of looking at those 650,000 individuals and try to figure out a little bit more about them in terms of where they live and so forth. As we do more research, hopefully we'll find out a little bit more about these people. And as I'll talk about later on in the interview today, the people that I spoke with respect to my research, 40 men and 40 women, were able to tell me a little bit more about their backgrounds and how they came to the decision of gray divorce.
So tell me a little bit about the differences between those generations. What were the most striking things they brought to the table for you?
Sure. So what I did was I looked at 40 men and 40 women who had experienced some type of gray divorce. Some of them actually had experienced a couple of gray divorces. And what was really, really interesting is that I've seen, when I talked to them a little bit about the reasons that they thought were most important in terms of driving their gray divorce decision, men and women gave different answers, and we can definitely talk about that. But what I found, it was a commonality between them and younger generations. If you look at the research that looks at younger people in their 20s and 30s, asking them why they're getting divorced, the answers given were quite similar, and they all have to do with, I think, what Sandhya referenced earlier, this idea of having a companion-type marriage. People in their 20s and 30s, as well as people over 50, they all value the same sort of marriage, and I actually am very interested to hear what Sandhya has to say about this in terms of her practice. In previous generations, you look at the research as to why people say they got divorced, and for women, it was things like economic non-support or my husband was hanging out with the boys too much. And for men, it was my wife was not giving me enough sex, or I was having problems with my in-laws. You don't see those reasons for young people now and for the over 50 population. You see reasons that impede their ability to have sort of this companion-like marriage, this idea that I am married to my best friend, and if anything interferes with that, I'm going to move towards the decision for a divorce. So, Sandhya, I don't know if you find that in your practice.
Yeah, sometimes there are, situations where a client will come in and you hear, again, from the therapeutic perspective, I don't want to generalize because every case is so different, but I think that you're right that they're generally saying that when they first got married, there were clear goals, there were commonalities. Many of them were very young. Sometimes children came before marriage, and they raised their children for a time. And as they grow up and as they get older and they're raising their children, they're finding that there are holes in their marriage that have not been filled by their partner, whether it's emotional intimacy, physical intimacy, career goals, things like that, you know, decisions that they were making together, and now for one reason or another, one or the other, is they feel like they're not being heard, or what I hear a lot is, I feel invisible with my partner. And so that is a big factor sometimes in helping people make the next step or move away from the marriage. What I usually talk to them about is what they want, and maybe we'll address this later on in the interview, is what their goals are for coming to therapy, and then leap from there.
And when you talk about invisibility, there have been so many articles about the invisibility of women as they go through perimenopause and menopause. And I've seen many articles reference it as the veil of life. How much do you think that plays into some of this angst that occurs behind closed doors between men and women, husbands and wives?
I think that it's a valid point. I mean, there are so many silent symptoms that women tend to go through, and they talk about changes in mood, and they talk about being generally different with their family members and their children, like, for example, irritability, snapping, mood swings, overly emotional, feeling like their reactions to certain things are out of proportion with what they feel like it should be, and we see this with people who are dealing with depression and anxiety and other sort of mental health disorders, is that these are invisible symptoms. It's not a scratch on your arm that you can point to. And so sometimes the feedback that they get from family members or spouses is, I don't know how to help you. I don't know what you're going through. I don't understand it. And in some cases, it's sort of the message is, get over it. We have things to do. And that is not helpful. And so that's where the conflict really comes in, when there is a lack of emotional support for whatever the women are going through on that side.
We're talking today with two women about the subject of great divorce, that is, divorce around midlife. I'd like to just digress for a second and ask both of you, why the interest and fascination in this topic? Jocelyn?
All of my research since I started as an academic has focused on family life. I grew up in a single-parent family, and I think that really has shaped many of my decisions, my choices, and my outlook on life. So when I became a professor at Rutgers, my first book looked at, it's called The Politics of Child Support in America. My second book looked at fathers and fathers' involvement in custody and child support decisions. So when I saw this term come up, gray divorce, and I said, well, that's really, really interesting. I saw a lot of these statistics out there, and it really intrigued me, but what I didn't see was a lot of in-depth interviews with people to sort of get a richness and understand the whole depth of their experience going through this process.
And Sandhya, do you have a particular focus on this group?
This is not a specialty of mine, but I do see it in my practice. And honestly, I've been privileged to hear Jocelyn's research and been fascinated and interested in the topics that she's researching. So I began to notice in my own casework how some of the things that she was finding through these interviews were cropping up in my own practice.
How much impact does this have on each of you? Jocelyn?
Well, so I am married. I'm not over 50, but I'm over 40. So one of the interesting things about doing this research and talking to these 80 people is to get a sense of, oh, okay, this is sort of where the problems have cropped up. I can relate to some of the things that my interviewees talked about in terms of some of their communication issues and some of the other types of things that have gone on in their lives. It's just very, very interesting in terms of hearing other people's experience and comparing it to my own.
And Sandhya?
Well, like Jocelyn, I'm over 40, I'm married, and I've been married for almost 18 years, so it is relevant to us as well, especially the communication. I agree with Jocelyn about that. Communication is always a challenge, I think, no matter what age, as you've seen in your research, that men value different things than women, and if there is not healthy communication, we cannot get our needs met, and there's a lot of, you should have known this, or he should have known that, or she should have known this. And so we tend to should on ourselves a lot and not name our needs for each other. And that's something that I get caught up with in my marriage and that we have to work hard at. That's something that I bring to my practice and certainly feel compelled to really listen to my clients who are in this kind of position to really hear what is important to them and consider it. In my own marriage, as we're headed quickly towards 50.
Sure. Jocelyn, I need to get back to the sociological, psychological, and economic issues that surround this whole topic of gray divorce and midlife. Sure. And I remain so fascinated by the fact that the previous generations just didn't struggle the way we do. Can you talk about what is the sociological impact of these times?
As I said, the reasons that they give for divorce right now was one of the most interesting things. And again, what I found was that they reflect the reasons people give in their 20s and 30s about why they get divorced. The differences were between men and women. So for men, the top reason that I heard was we grew apart. And then second of all, that their wives engaged in physical cheating. Third, they said that their wives had some type of financial differences or financial problems. Fourth, they said that their wives had some type of mental health problems. And fifth, they had problems or differences over raising their children. For women, the number one reason was that their husbands engaged in physical cheating. Again, another difference between the sexes was that their second most common reason for women was they said that their husbands had some type of pornography, alcohol, or drug addiction. The pornography one was very interesting to me, internet pornography in particular. Third, very different again, didn't emerge from the husbands. They said that the husbands engaged in some type of verbal or emotional abuse. Fourth, they grew apart. And lastly, they said that their husbands had some type of mental health problems. So there were some similarities, but there were some differences between the sexes as well. In my research overall, I talk about two types of penalties, and I think this gets more specifically to your question about the sociological ramifications of gray divorce. The economic gray divorce penalty is what happens to women. And this is really, really important for us as a society to understand. When women divorce after the age of 50, they take a huge economic hit. And this happens for a bunch of reasons. So they go through the divorce process, they get some type of divorce settlement, but they do tend to be much further behind their male spouses in terms of their ability to earn money after the divorce, as well as save for retirement. So oftentimes what I would hear through my interviews is that women would take significant time out of the paid labor market, raise their children, not earn money, not put money into Social Security, not put money into retirement accounts, and then usually go back to either part-time or full-time work. At the time of the divorce, they all of a sudden look at, oh my God, their human capital, they haven't had updated skills, or oh my God, they haven't saved as much as their husbands in terms of retirement, and they're at a severe, severe disadvantage. So I heard a lot about financial stress coming from women. On the other side, men experience what I call a social grade divorce penalty. The social grade divorce penalty is the complete or at least partial loss of social networks that takes place after a divorce for men. Oftentimes, in marriages, women are the ones who maintain friendship networks. They're the ones who maintain family networks. They're the ones who plan the family vacation, call the relatives, send presents to people. And when the couple gets a divorce, the man no longer has those ties. He's dependent on his wife to maintain those ties. So repeatedly in the course of my interviews, men talked about losing friends, losing adult family members, but most importantly and most painfully for these men was the loss of their relationships with their adult children. Now, oftentimes they talked about, you know, the divorce sort of being this poisoning factor, and their children sided with their mothers. It's not been really researched well. Oftentimes, children of divorce, now most of these children, you have to remember, if the parents are divorcing after the age of 50, most of these children are going to be young adults. For whatever reason, and I have some guesses, these adult children tend to side more with the mothers in terms of the divorce, and tend to withdraw from their fathers. And then that has a whole bunch of other ramifications for fathers and their mental health, their social isolation, and the ability to rely on their children to care for them. If those children aren't there, we as a society are in big trouble.
Very interesting. Sandhya, if we take the same question to you and we just turn it around with regard to the emotions behind these.
Yes. You know, for women, as Jocelyn was saying, the financial deficit that's left by gray divorce can create a lot of inadequacy feelings that parents, you know, they want to give their kids what they can. They want to meet their needs and then some. And when there's a financial deficit on one side, then there is usually a situation where the deficit will cause a feeling such as depression or anxiety, and then there will be a meaning attached to that feeling, such as I am not capable, or I am not worthy of acceptance by my children, or worthy of love, or, you know, something that becomes a core belief and infects their ability to move forward. So when they're coming in for therapy, a lot of times that is where it begins. And I hear women especially talk about those kinds of struggles. They appear to have good, adequate emotional support from family and friends, but this particular piece, this financial piece, as Jocelyn was mentioning, is at the forefront of their concerns. How do I support myself? How do I support my children? You know, whether it's putting them through college, or, you know, helping them with a first car, or Christmas birthdays. I mean, just something like that can become very difficult. And so the meaning they attach to these deficits becomes infected and grows into things like depression, anxiety, even panic attacks, because they don't know what resources they have available to them. They don't know how to make up for what they've lost. With men, it's a little different, because I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen that many men who've gone through this, and there have been numerous studies in the past that have highlighted that fact, that men don't tend to seek therapy or counseling as freely as women do. They're not as emotive, they're not as tied to the idea of seeking help. But occasionally, there's a case that walks through my door. They are loners, they are lonely, and the story is that my in-laws live right across the street, something like that. Or they live in the same town, but I never see them anymore. My wife did all that. You know, again, it's the same type of thing that Jocelyn was saying. It's very true. Usually the wife plans everything. She's the one that moves the husband into the social circles. Whether they want to go or not initially, they're going. And it does bring something to their lives. And when they're alone, whether they were the ones that left or vice versa, there's a hole there that doesn't seem to get filled very quickly. And sometimes counseling or therapy tends to feel like weakness for men, instead of feeling strong enough to, you know, use the resources. And that's how I sort of view counseling and therapy, is that it is a resource. It is sort of pampering yourself from the inside out, and it takes a lot of strength to move in that direction. And so, but it's funny how most men and people in general come into my office and they say, I don't want anybody to know I'm here. It's almost a shame thing because of what they think it means. And so that's the biggest thing I think that arcs over men and women, is the meaning that they attach to what's happened to them, and then what they do with that. Do they grab onto it, or do they say, no, I'm going to reject that negative thought about myself, and I'm going to get in touch with my strengths? And that is one way that we work together.
I think the current buzzword today is reinvention, and by what you've both brought to the table, it sounds like in many ways men don't necessarily have to reinvent themselves from their gray divorce on. They're probably staying at their same jobs, they probably are staying with their same hobbies, and yet here are these women who are struggling financially, and reinvention is a necessity. Would you agree?
I think that's true. I think that women go through a lot more changes at the end of the great divorce process. They have to reevaluate themselves. They have to reevaluate their lives. What was really interesting about some of the research that I did, though, was that overall, men and women both said the same thing in terms of what was the worst part of being divorced at the stage of their lives. And both of them said loneliness, and then women tacked on financial worries and financial concerns. When I asked them what is the best part about being divorced at this stage in their lives, they also had the same answer, and that was freedom and independence. So in many cases too, men might not be changing jobs, but they did talk about, I'm free now to go and eat this fish sandwich. My wife never liked fish. I can never eat the fish sandwich, and now I'm going to eat fish sandwiches 7 days a week. Or I'm going to go out and I'm going to start a new, my wife didn't like it when I golfed, and now I'm going to golf every day. So this idea of liberation came from both men and women, freedom, independence, a chance to start over. But I do think that women do go through much more reinvention, primarily due to economic necessity.
So we're running out of time today, and I'm wondering, do either of you have any final thoughts about the subject of gray divorce? Sandhya?
I feel like no matter what age you are, but since we're talking about gray divorce, that a real key to having a good divorce, if there is such a thing, but if, you know, the best case scenario for being able to, as we were talking about, reinvent yourself, especially for women, is learning to be assertive with yourself, learning to be assertive with your spouse as you go through this process, because I think it helps close the gaps when there's confusion or questions, and then having the priority of putting yourself first, of being able to self-care and raise your self-awareness as you try to reinvent yourself. A lot of times that's absent because of the sadness, the depression, the loss. There's a grieving period, and we can get stuck in that if we begin to attach negative meaning. So self-care is very important, assertive communication, very important.
And Jocelyn?
Yeah, I would say that, first of all, we've got to be aware that this is a social phenomenon. It's a trend, and it's definitely going to grow. It's not going to diminish. So we've got to be aware of gray divorce, and I think, secondly, we've got to be prepared. For men, this gets to what Sandhya was talking about in terms of having psychological resources in place, supporting men going to therapy, seeking out therapy, particularly in group settings and in individual settings as well. I think we've got to be supportive of that as a society. For women, we've got to do a lot better in terms of helping women get back on their feet financially, especially if they've taken time out of their paid work life, if they've been doing that, to make sure that they understand the ramifications of their actions and sort of build a better society where we value care work and we compensate women more effectively than we do right now in terms of the time that they've taken out of the labor market. So at the time, if God forbid, they do experience a gray divorce, they won't be as financially worried as they are right now.
We've been talking with two women about the subject of gray divorce, that is, divorce around midlife. Jocelyn Crowley and Sandhya Firma-Higgins, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm Sema Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. To the listener, thank you for joining us. And until next time, I hope you take care.